Please help me welcome our speaker tonight, Anthony from Solution on the Shore from New Jersey.
My name's Anthony Huffnagel and I'm an alcoholic.
Yay.
Can everybody hear me?
Yeah.
More importantly, can everybody see me? Because I look good. Just give it a second to set in. I came out from Neptune, New Jersey tonight. My home group is Solution on the Shore. We meet on Saturday nights at 8 o'clock in Neptune, New Jersey. And it's a lot like this meeting, a single-hour speaker meeting. We take like 3.5 minutes in the beginning, do a couple readings, and we throw somebody up there. And we bring in guys from all over the country, all over the state, you know, to really knock home a message that there's some hope available here in Alcoholics Anonymous, that AA isn't a death sentence, that there's a real life to be had here. And it's completely sober, and having a wonderful time. And like at a few months sober, I was attracted to this group, you know, just like 2 months after it started. And it's absolutely been my home in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, that's where I feel part of. That's why I am. You know, a group of like-minded individuals whose main focus is helping people. And, you know, I really think it's the best home group in the history of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I mean, that might show my skewed perception on things, but you got to come check it out to prove me wrong. You know, what's that say? Contempt prior to investigation? So... come check it out before you tell me I'm wrong. But I really love it. I really do. And, you know, there's sort of a short version of how I'm standing up here tonight. And that's because I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, didn't do anything, then a few months sober was miserable, got hooked up with a strong sponsor who took me through these 12 steps. And enabled me to tap into the sort of the sunlight of the spirit. And then I went on to do this with other members of Alcoholics Anonymous, to offer them this help that was freely shown to me. And because I've done that, I haven't found it necessary to take a drink, a drug, or a pill since September 7th, 2009. And that's something that I'm really not grateful for enough, because I never achieved anything in my life. I don't know if anybody else can identify with that, but like from about 10 years old, I was drinking pretty well every day. And like, I didn't really get a chance to achieve anything. The main focal point of my life from pretty well the day I took a drink until the day I came into Alcoholics Anonymous was to drink as much as I could, to blot everything out, to ignore everything, to be drunk as could be. And the thought of moderation, or like maybe I should stop, it didn't really cross my mind. That's just how I drank. I don't know anybody else. But, you know, it was a heck of a good time. I really like drinking. I'm not up here to tell you that I'm against drinking or drugs. I really like to. If you're new here tonight and you're not out of ideas and you can still drink, please do. Please do. I mean, if I could hack it, I would, but I can't. You know, I firmly believe that I can't have alcohol in any form, you know, whatsoever. And so if you're new and you think you still can, have one for me, please. But, you know, I'd like to start at the beginning you know, sort of tell you what I was like from the very beginning. Because I don't know if I was born alcoholic or if I picked up alcoholism somewhere along the way. But I know I did some very crazy things from the very beginning. I mean, I started acting out in all sorts of ways from a very young age. I tell you about the first crazy thing. I was about 5-6 years old. And my parents came to me and they said, Anthony, we need to move. The landlord sold the house. We got to move to another town. I'm like kicking and screaming, like, why do we have to move? Like, do you have any idea how tough it is for me to find new friends? To find teachers who can put up with me? Like, I'm a handful at this young age. Like, causing all kinds of havoc already. And I'm kicking and screaming the whole way. And I couldn't convince my parents not to move. I really tried, but it didn't work. And we moved to a new town, like 2 miles away. Like, right there. And I remember going to school the first day, like, completely consumed by this self-centered fear. You know, this... Is that God calling?
Yeah.
You know, I went through that first day completely consumed by this self-centered fear. Like, well, how are they gonna look at me? How are they gonna judge me? How am I gonna talk to people? How am I gonna approach people? And this is all in like the second I'm walking in the door. You know, it doesn't take very long for all this fear to just hit me in waves. And so I go through the day just pretty well completely silent. Too scared to talk to anybody. And like, I make it up to recess. And my idea of making new friends and interacting with people without a drink is to pull a hooded sweatshirt up over my head and to run around and growl at the other kids. Like, I don't know if that's alcoholic or if that's insanity, but I mean, I know I was compelled to do crazy things by this fear that was deep inside me that I didn't know where it was coming from the very beginning. And that's, you know, that's a pattern throughout my story, that I'm characterized by this fear and that I act out in all sorts of absurd ways because of it. And like, I go along for a few years and like, I do some other crazy stuff. I stabbed a dinner guest in the leg with a fork once. I don't know if that's alcoholic or crazy, but you know, this is the kind of nice guy I am as a young child before I take a drink. And, you know, my parents thought I was crazy. Like, they thought I was legitimately mentally ill. Yeah, I know, you're shaking your head. They kind of thought that when I was drinking, too. But they took me around to all these nice, well-meaning doctors who said, here, take this, take that, take them together, maybe they'll do something. And like, you know, I tried it, and they were well-intentioned people, and you know, they couldn't give me anything to take away this feeling, like when they put Anthony together, that they missed his last puzzle piece. You know, they couldn't give me anything that took that away. That just, I don't know what it is in this life that I need, but I can't find my niche. I can't find what completes me, and I'm just so scared of everything around me. You know, they couldn't give me anything for that. The only thing that I found that cured that feeling was Wild Turkey whiskey. You guys are in Pennsylvania. I think you like Wild Turkey whiskey out here. I mean, I'm from Jersey and I really like it. And, you know, probably the first time that I got good and drunk, I was about 10, 11 years old. And we had a big family party, a big pig roast. A few hundred people were there. And I got the job to be the bartender. And she's a great job for a budding alcoholic. And, like, there was this one guy there who was completely miserable. Just coming over to the bar, staring at his shoes. I'd slide him over a drink, and he'd come back just a little bit happier. And I'd slide him over another drink, and he'd come back just a little bit happier. And after 4 or 5 drinks, this guy's like skipping back. I go, Tony, how you doing? What's going on? You know, he's sitting there pulling me aside, like, you know, like that. And he's telling me the secrets to life. I'm like, what happened here? You were miserable an hour ago. And now we're best friends, and you're telling me the secrets to life? Like, I could see from this young age that this little bit of whiskey had some type of a profound effect on this individual. And I wanted what he had. You know, that simple. I wanted these waves of fear to wash away. I wanted to be able to just go interact free and clear. I didn't want to have to, like, plan out how the conversation was going to go between you and I. I didn't want to have to think about it and go through it over and over in my head before I could even go and approach you. And so at the end of the night, I go under the bar and there's a bottle of Wild Turkey whiskey there. You know, it's shiny. It's got a turkey on it. What could be harmful about that? It looks like fun. Oh, yeah. So I fill up a red cup about halfway with this. And I take a couple. That's right. That's good stuff. And I take a couple hits off this cup. And it's like somebody dumps a bucket of water on me. Like all this stuff that's running through my head, this fear, this judgment on what you think about me, it all just washes away. And I can just go and interact with my little group of friends free and clear. I can just walk up and start a conversation. I can go and I can terrorize the adults without caring what the consequences are. And I did, trust me. I was trying to fight this biker guy. And I'm like 10 years old and that high and about as wide as I am now. And it didn't go too well. And there was this other kid there who's a few years older than me from up the block. And I went up to him with the rest of the whiskey I had in my hand. And I said, "Hey, do you know what this is? Do you have any idea what this is?" He's like, "Yeah, it's just alcohol." Like, just alcohol? This is the key to life right here. This is what they forgot to give me when I popped out of the womb. Like, come out, grab a fifth, here's how you deal with life. It's real easy. I don't know what happened the rest of that night. It was the first successful night. You know, I put a little bit of whiskey in me and it gave me some freedom that I never had before. You see, I drank and I get free. I get released from this bondage of self. And very quickly, I started drinking pretty much on a daily basis. You know, I was about 12 years old, and I would watch my dad go to work, and he'd come home and he'd pour himself a drink. No big deal. He's a 40-year-old guy. But me and my younger brother are watching him like, this is a damn good idea. Why didn't we think of that? And so we go to school and we just barely make it through the day and we run home off the bus. And if my parents are home, one of us will distract them while the other one of us will go into the liquor cabinet and take like a shot of rum, tequila, gin and scotch. Like, yeah, a real classy drink. And then we mix it all together. Because it's better like that. It's got more of a punch. And you see, that stuff was disgusting. It was really bad. But I would drink this concoction down. And for the first time in the day, I could take a seat and just take a sigh. A big... like life isn't so bad anymore. It's actually worth living. You see, that's what happens when I take a drink. Is that life seems manageable. It seems okay. It seems like I don't really care what you think anymore. I don't. And my head shuts off a little bit. And I can just sit there with, you know, almost a little bit of serenity. A little bit of peace about me. And then I overshoot the mark. And things don't go so well. I started drinking pretty much on a daily basis from 12. You know, and like there's no magical experience that I've had in my life that makes me alcoholic. It's not because my mom didn't love me enough. It's not because my dad wasn't there enough. It's not because I got molested as a kid. You know, you see, these are all experiences that I've had in my life. But they have no bearing on why I'm alcoholic. You see, I drink because I like the effect produced by alcohol. And I have an abnormal reaction to alcohol. You know, I take a drink and I can't safely predict what's going to happen. You know, I take a drink and I don't know. Something sets off. The big book refers to it as an allergy. I think I've got a pretty simple experience that I can relate to that allergy. You see, I do things like I get some of my friends over the house when I'm a young teenager. And we start drinking a little bit, you know, just to have a good time after school. And we get the bright idea that we're going to make Jell-O shots. Now, none of us have ever made Jell-O shots before. And we don't have those stupid little shot cups. And we don't know that you need to add water to Jell-O shots. So we take a gallon of Papa of vodka and a pack of red Jello, and we it gets better. And we boil the vodka and dump the Jello packet in it, and then we make like 6 red cups of, I guess, Jello cups. They're not really shots at that point. And you see, my friends weren't alcoholic because they took like a spoonful or two of that. Like, this stuff is disgusting. And it's not just because it's pop-off. It is foul. And you see, I take a couple spoonfuls of it, and I put that alcohol on my body, and it sets me off. So I eat my cup, and I eat 2 of my friend's other cups. And then I wake up in the woods a few days later, like, what time? Whoa, what day is it? It's not Thursday anymore. What happened? You see, I didn't set out to do that. I set out with these honest intentions that I truly believe, and I put that alcohol on my body, and it does something to me it doesn't do to non-alcoholics, I'll tell you that. You know, and I went along for a few years, and drinking with relatively little consequences. I mean, when I first started drinking, I thought that my problem wasn't that I drank every day. It was that I had a lack of a girl in my life. So I would ask all these little girls out when I was in like 6th, 7th grade at night when I was good and drunk. And sometimes they'd be dumb enough to say yes. And then I'd get to school the next day and I'd be sober and I would ignore them. Because I'm just so filled with fear. You know, I think that this is what I need, and then I don't have any liquor in my body and I can't do anything because this fear plagues me again. And you see, I go along trying to search and seek out what I can find that's going to fill up this empty puzzle piece for a few years. And I go on, and I'm drinking pretty well every day, and really with little consequences. I mean, I made the mistake of telling a young woman that I got drunk twice when I was about 14, which was a lie, and she broke up with me. And then I stopped chasing women. And at 15, like, I entered the New Jersey judicial system. They're good guys out there. I don't know how it is in Pennsylvania, but they saved my life. Not for another 5 or 6 years, but... And you see, like, I had this whole big court case and trial, and, you know, I got sobered up for a few months at this point. Like, not through AA or rehab or any 12-step program or anything like that. Just fear. Like, fear sobered me up. Like, I had a whole big felony indictment hanging over me, and I wanted to go to trial sober. And so I went to trial, and I ended up just getting sentenced to a few years of probation. And I go to the probie once or twice, and she's like, all right, kid, I'll see you in a month. I'm like, I can go out and have a drink tonight. Finally, I can go out and get some relief. Because this sober stuff is painful. It's not very good being sober if you're like me. And see, I set out with the honest intention to just get drunk one night. And that's all it's going to be. And you see, it's... You know, I honestly believe this stuff when I tell it to myself. And I go out and I put that alcohol into my body and it sets off this allergy. And I really don't take a sober breath for another 5 years until I come into Alcoholics Anonymous. You see, that's the type of reaction that I have to alcohol. And before I went out and put that liquor in my body that night, you could have put me on a lie detector test. And I asked me, Anthony, are you just going to drink tonight? And I would have said yes, and it would have came up true. Like, I'm not just telling myself lies. Like, I full-on believe these delusions that it's going to be different, and I can control what happens when I put this alcohol into my body. And you see, the flip side to this alcoholism that I have is that I have an obsession of the mind. Is that when I'm stopped, I don't know how to stay stopped. When I'm sober for any period of time, it's painful, and I need some relief. And I'm going to find relief however I can. And then, you know, in my life, my experience, the only 2 things that I've really found that give me relief from my alcoholism is a lot of whiskey or Alcoholics Anonymous. I haven't found any middle-of-the-road solution. I don't know about anybody else, but those are the only two things that will sufficiently quiet my head down. And Alcoholics Anonymous has a whole lot less consequences and a lot more benefits for me. And you see, during these next 5 years, like, things got bad. Like, really bad. You see, like, during these next 5 years, like, I did a whole lot of drugs. There's no two ways about it. But, you see, I don't identify myself as a drug addict because I'm not. I'm really not. I'm an alcoholic. I have this abnormal reaction to alcohol. And really, I suffer from a spiritual malady. You know, that missing puzzle piece that I was talking about. Like, what can I find externally that's going to fill this internal void? What's going to fill me up and make me feel whole and complete? Like I finally found my niche in life. And I searched these different things out. I searched out, you know, working 100 hours a week, devoting all my time and attention to a woman, to drinking around the clock, gambling, anything really that I can devote all my time and attention to. It'll make me feel filled up, like I'm whole and complete. Excuse me. Like I finally found my niche in life. I found my place in the world. And things are going to be good. This is what I've been searching for my whole life. You see, the problem for me is that I start waking up a few months or a couple years later. And I got this old itch that I can't quite scratch. I'm waking up and life isn't quite what I want it to be. I'm irritable and I'm discontent with what's going on around me. And like, it doesn't matter what's going on in my life, if my life is going wonderfully or terribly. Like at some point this stuff just isn't enough for me. And I wake up feeling hopeless, not knowing where to turn. Not knowing, you know, what next do I need to seek out to try and fill up this void inside of me. You see, this is where I found myself at 19 years old before I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I knew that I had crossed this line that I can't control what I'm doing anymore. Like I'm putting all sorts of things inside my body and I'm waking up and I'm doing terrible things. You know, And it didn't start out like that. Like, I got raised in a good family. My parents are good, hardworking people. I got two brothers. We live in a nice neighborhood. And they raised me right. And I slowly work myself into this way of life where I'm waking up every day and I'm stealing from everybody around me. I'm stealing from my family, my job. I'm disappearing for days on end. I'm having my brothers, when I come home, they're yelling at me, telling me that I'm not even a brother to them. That why don't I just get the hell out and not come back. And this isn't where I started out. You see, and I get to this delusional state where I think this is the only normal life. I think that these things I'm doing and my failed relationships with people is the only normal life for a guy like me. Because I need to be drunk. And if these relationships need to go, they need to go. And if I need to run over you and stomp over you to get what I need to get, I need to do it. There's no two ways about it. And I want help. I really do. Oh, but even in this desperate state where all these relationships are gone in my life, and everybody can see how much of a mess I am, My pride's still there. My ego's still there. And it says, well, what are your friends going to think? What's your family going to think? How are you going to go to somebody and ask them for help? How are you going to say that you can't control what you're doing anymore? How am I going to do that? You know, that's the amazing thing about this ego that I have, that even in these terrible times, it holds me back. And so I don't ask for help. And luckily, the New Jersey judicial system steps in again. I tell you, they're right there when you need them. It sure as heck doesn't seem like it at the time. But being sober a couple years, this boy saved my life. And I remember getting home, getting bailed out, and getting asked by my dad flat out, like, you know, we kind of see what's going on now. You know, do you have a problem? Do you need help? Really, for the first time, like, it was on me. It was right there. I was faced by that self-imposed crisis that I couldn't postpone or evade anymore. And I gave the first honest answer. I just said, yes, I need help. I don't know what I need to do, but I need to do something. And you see, I ended up going away to a rehab. And up to this point, like, I thought rehab was like a tune-up. Like, most people take their car in for an oil change every 3,000 miles. In my lifestyle, you go to rehab every couple years and get fixed up good as new, and you're good for another couple years. Because I had plenty of friends who'd go away to rehab, and they'd come back, and we'd have, like, a big blowout for them. Like, glad you're home. Glad. It sounds terrible, but that was my perception of rehab. Take 30, 60, 90 days, maybe 6 months if you're really screwing up, and come back and we'll have a blowout for you and we get back to normal life. I had never seen anybody up to that point go away to the rehab and, like, completely change their life, and I didn't see him again. And so I went away to this rehab, and you see, like, but before that, like, that night I got arrested, my truck got impounded, and I woke up the next day, and I'm, like, going and trying to steal cars off my block. And I've never stolen a car before in my life, and it didn't go very well. You see, that's the grip this alcoholism has on me. That I gotta do what I gotta do. It makes me do these crazy things that I just don't want to do. You see, when the choice comes down the line, like, do you want to steal from your family today? Or do you want to sit here and feel like you're going to die? Like, I love my family. I really do. But you see, there's nothing I can do. My feet are moving and I got to take from them yet again. You see, that's the grip this stuff has on me. It makes me do insane things that I wouldn't normally do. I go away to this 30-day rehab, and I don't know what the heck happened there. You know, I really don't. And because I went to a rehab is not why I'm standing up here today. And I'm not knocking rehabs, but, like, going away for 30 days doesn't fix somebody like me. Like, I'm a really sick guy. Like, I'll give you my sponsor's number after the meeting if you really want to say. Like, I have a great sponsor, but, you know, I went away to this rehab, and, like, I needed someplace to be physically withdrawn. I went away there, I was physically addicted. I needed someplace to flop around for a couple weeks. And I really believe that I need to be removed from this war zone for a little bit. Because from the time I was a semi-conscious individual, 10, 11 years old, I started drinking, and that's really all I ever knew. My whole life was engulfed in it. It was encompassed by this alcoholic lifestyle. You know, I never knew anything else before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm not trying to tell you I'm like a victim of anything. I'm just letting you know all I ever did was drink before I went away to rehab. And so I needed a couple days away from that. I went there, and the only thing that I really remember that they told me is when you get out, go to an AA meeting, tell them that you're new, that you need help, that you just get out of rehab. And so I got out of that rehab after 30 days, and I went to stay in a halfway house. And it was actually out in Florida, not even here in Jersey, which was fabulous. Like, I've heard that the rehab progression goes way downhill after you go to a couple. I only went to one, so my rehab experience was fabulous. And so I went to this halfway house in Florida, and it was like a mile from the beach, and I had no money, no work. And so I made the smart decision at 30 days sober, and I went to the beach with the girls from rehab every day. And needless to say, you got kicked out of that halfway house. And I... Not a good way to stay sober. And I came back to Jersey, like every self-respecting alcoholic. I went to live with mom and dad. Proud of that one. I know some other people have done that in here. I can't be all alone. I know what happens when we get in some stuff and we're alcoholic. We call mom and ask for help. And so that's what I did. I went to back to live with my parents. And I went to Alcoholics Anonymous. I went to a clubhouse near my home. And I started going out to AA meetings every night. And I didn't raise my hand and say that I'm new and I need help and that I just got out of rehab, because I didn't really believe that I needed that, and I wanted to shop around for a sponsor. You know, I was waking up every day and going to work and just absolutely hating my job. Like, it was terrible. And I'm going home and I'm living with my parents. And they want me to do crazy stuff, like carry my fair share and like do chores and stuff. I'm like, what are you guys talking about? I hate you. You're mean. You know? And it's like they're purposely just trying to do stuff to get me mad. And I'm going out to these AA meetings at night. And I'm sitting there all alone with that same fear I had as a young boy going into that new school. This bubbling, churning feeling boiling up inside of me. Like, I want nothing more to just go up and introduce myself to somebody and say, I need a friend, I need some help. But I'm so plagued by this fear that I can't ask for help. And so at a few months sober, I find that I'm more miserable sober than I was drunk. I'm like, what gives here? I'm supposed to get sober and life's supposed to go well. I'm getting sober and my life's going terrible. I think that's the real test there if you're alcoholic. If you get sober and your life goes great, you don't have to do what we do. If you get sober and your life goes to hell, well, you can come sit in here and we'll show you how it gets a little better. And it gets to a point where I need some sort of help. I need something. Because just me doing what I think is right isn't working anymore. And I raised my hand at a discussion meeting at the clubhouse near my home. I said, I'm Anthony, I'm alcoholic, and I need some help. I really feel like I'm screwing up here. I don't have a sponsor. And being sober isn't too fabulous. Luckily, there's people here in Alcoholics Anonymous who are willing to offer help. You know, I'm one of those individuals today. And a random man came up to me after that meeting. And he did something completely different. He came to me and he didn't ask me about my drinking or how I thought or felt or anything crazy like that. He came up to me and he said, this is what I used to do. This is how screwed up and defective I am. And he convinced me that he was like me. He convinced me that he drank like me, and more importantly, that he thought and felt like me. Because, like, not all of us have the same story. But I believe there's a good chance if we're alcoholic that we pretty well share some common themes about thinking and feeling about things. And so he said, here's my number. I want you to pray, to go to an AA meeting, and to give me a call in that order. And we'll see how it works out. I was a little taken back. I mean, this guy was like twice my age. Like, I wasn't coming into Alcoholics Anonymous to make friends with old guys. And I'm sorry to offend you old guys. I love you today. But that was my skewed perception at the time. And I called him the next day because I was desperate and I didn't know where else to turn. I was absolutely out of ideas. And he said, it's good to hear from you, Anthony. Did you pray? I'm like, well, I don't believe in God. It'd be stupid for me to pray. Why would I do something like that? And I heard a few seconds of silence. And he said, it doesn't matter if you understand or believe in it. Just take the simple action. Just when you wake up in the morning, say, please help me stay sober. And when you go to bed, as long as you don't find yourself drunk, thank him for keeping you sober. That's simple. It doesn't matter if you understand it or believe in it. Just take these simple actions. And I think this is where I started to recover in Alcoholics Anonymous. That I started to have some sort of change in me. Because for the first time, I did something that I didn't like, that I didn't believe in, that I didn't understand, that somebody told me, if you do this, there's a pretty damn good chance that your life will improve. And I did what this man said. You see, in order for Alcoholics Anonymous to work for me, I had to be thoroughly beaten into submission. I had to be 100% out of ideas, not knowing where to turn or what to do or how to manage my life anymore. You see, that's how it was explained to me, is that all I really have is a managing problem, that I don't know how to manage my own damn life, drunk or sober. That simple. If I can quit managing it, I might be okay. Yeah, it might be okay. It's pretty tough to get out of the way some days. I don't know if anybody else finds that. And so I started calling this man on a daily basis. I started praying twice a day. Not believing that this stuff was going to work, but being out of ideas. So I took these actions that I didn't yet believe in. And you see, I had sort of an interesting experience finding God. I absolutely believe in a God today with all my heart and soul. No doubt about it. That's not how I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. You see, after praying twice a day for probably 4 or 5 months and still not believing, really just thinking I'm giving myself a pep talk, like, go Anthony, stay sober today. Good job, kid, you stayed sober. And my sponsor directed me to read Came to Believe. Terribly dry book. If you're having trouble sleeping and you're new, read Came to Believe. I'm just stating the facts. And I made it 100 pages through this book or so. 100 pages. That was tough. Took a few weeks to do. It did. It was kind of a battle with my sponsor. But, you know, I just glossed over almost everything in there. And then I came across this, not more than a paragraph, even if that, a couple sentences. And it said, if the waves keep rolling in, if the leaves fall off of the trees in autumn and they come back in the spring, if the sun rises in the morning and sets at night, who am I to say that's not God? That just right here it hit me. You know, who the hell am I? Some 19-year-old punk to say there's no God. This has been a question that's been asked since the dawn of humanity. Why do I think that I can say that there is no God? And really that day is when I broke down this wall of belligerent denial. And I started to allow some of this sunlight of the Spirit to shine through. And it's through the experiences that I had a little further along in Alcoholics Anonymous that helped me to believe in this God. And you see, my sponsor took me through the 12 steps in a couple short months. Maybe like 3-4 months, I went through the 12 steps. You know, and it was a little bit odd. It's not how I take guys through the steps today, but it worked for me. So it shows me I don't know what the heck people need. And he had me use the 12 and 12 for the first 3 steps. which is a good book, but there's no clear-cut direction in there. And, you know, he had me read the first three chapters a whole bunch of times for like a month. And then he said, all right, page 65, there's an inventory, go and do it. Like, a little more direction, please? Like, no, there's a couple pages in there, read them, write the inventory, and we'll take a look at it. And so, being the good alcoholic that I am, I didn't read, I just looked at the picture. And it... and it, if you guys are familiar with that, I think that's like a trick for sponsors, because there's only three columns on there. So, I write out this fabulous three-column inventory. And I take it to my sponsor. And he says, that's good, but you missed the last column. I'm like, oh, God. It was painful. And, you know, I didn't spend a bunch of time. I stalled on that inventory. And I didn't really do a whole lot with it for like a month. And then some guy asked me for help. And I woke up the next morning at like 6 a.m. and I spent like 3 hours and I wrote my inventory. You know, that was my experience with it. And I wrote everything out on there. You know, it wasn't huge, 25, 30 names. But everything was on there. Everything that I had never told anybody before. Like, I wasn't talking to meetings about being molested as a kid at a few months sober. No, I don't give a hoot if you know or not. If it's something I can say to help you, good. I mean, there's some more graphic stuff on there that's probably not appropriate from a podium, but oh, I was a sick guy. Still am. And you see, I went and I read this inventory with my sponsor. And for the first time, I could go home and just put my head on the pillow and go to sleep. I didn't have my head going crazy about all these things that I had done to people that people seemingly did to me. I woke up and I could look the world in the eye. You know, and I had the first real meaningful relationship in my life. You know, I had a family and friends, but they didn't know me like this man did. He knew me wholly and completely, everything about me, and he was still there. You know, I called him and he still answered his phone. And we went around Alcoholics Anonymous together. And I went on and, like, I did probably a terrible 6 and 7. I consolidated it down to about 20 minutes, but I'm still here today. So, apparently that worked good enough. And I went out and I started to make amends. And I had some real profound experiences with making amends. You know, some profound experiences that really cemented disbelief in a God. Because you see, I went back and I went to my dad to make amends to him. And I said, Dad, listen, this is exactly what I did. This is what I stole from you. I drove you insane. I was a terrible son. I was never able to show up for you. You know, this is what I did. You know, is there anything I can do to make it right? And he just, you know, he looked me in the eye and he shook my hand and he told me that he was proud of me. You know, that's not the type of relationship I had with my father before coming into Alcoholics Anonymous. That he could shake my hand and look me in the eye and tell me that he's proud of me. To experiences like that I've had here in Alcoholics Anonymous that show me that there's something bigger than me here. You see, I also had another pretty profound experience. I had a, you know, really good friend growing up. When I was about 40 days sober, he overdosed and died. And like, I had essentially turned my back on him a few months prior for some really petty stuff. And I had some real big amends to make to this dude. And so I was directed to write a letter. And so I wrote this amends letter to him. And I went down to the beach where we had done a whole lot of surfing together. And one morning when the sun was coming up, I read this letter. And I really felt deep down inside that I made a connection with him. That I had set things right between us. and that I finally made amends to him. You know, it's experiences like that that show me something bigger than me is working here. Because just a couple months prior to that, I would belligerently deny any sort of a belief in a God and fight you if you said you believed in it. And I go there a couple months later and read this letter and feel this connection to him, to my friend that passed on, and that things have really been set right between us. It's that stuff that enabled me to get this sunlight of the Spirit inside of me. It's not thinking my way there or reading books. Like, that stuff's all well and good, but it's the actions that I've taken here that are beyond myself that have enabled me to believe in a God and to trust in this God. And you see, I went on to go on and work with other alcoholics. And that's been the bright spot of my life. You know, I do a nightly inventory, and my prayer life has absolutely expanded. I ask myself most nights when I get home. Some nights I fall asleep. I mean, I'm not perfect. I'll be honest here. I go home and ask myself, was I selfish, dishonest, resentful, or afraid today? And if I was, I ask God to remove it. And I talk to my sponsor about it. I don't have these big conversations with God anymore. You know, it's real simple. I wake up and I ask God to help me with a few things. And I ask Him, where can I be a maximum service today? Show me what Your will is for me. And please help me with the power to get it done. That's it. I'm not asking Him for what I want and what He thinks about it. I'm asking Him for what I need to do. That's simple. And maybe that seems crazy, but that's what I believe today. That's my perception of the relationship with my God. And you see, something crazy happened along the way of taking these 12 steps. That obsession to go out and drink, it just disappeared. You know, I haven't been plagued by that obsession since I was a few months sober. It's absolutely gone. I'm filled with a real happiness today. And when I went to rehab, they were like, you can be happy and sober, kid. Like, how about you go die happy and sober? Obviously, you don't know my case. Happy and sober don't go together for a guy like me. I'm happy and sober today. You know, and it's not due to any shiny thing I have. Like, I got a couple shiny things recently. And I wake up and it's on me. And they don't mean a goddamn thing. I wake up and this alcoholism is on me. And the only thing that will keep me from me is intense work with another alcoholic. Oh, I've had times where I'm madder than heck, where I'm just boiling over with rage, ready to kill somebody. You know, I'll pray, I'll try to eat because I like doing that, and I'll try to sleep because I like doing that. I'll try to talk to my sponsor because sometimes that works, and I'm still boiling over, and I don't know what to do. And I'll get a new guy, and I'll sit down with him for a couple hours, and I'll share some of my experience and start taking him through these 12 steps. And my problems will fade away. They'll absolutely just fade away. And I'll be okay again. See, that's the magic that I found in here. Because today, I still live with my parents. I still work the same job. I still go to that same clubhouse. I don't hate my job. I don't hate my family. I carry my fair share. And I love that clubhouse. You see, I think Chuck Chamberlain put it the best. That all we're really looking to do here to find a little bit of heaven on earth is to get a new pair of glasses. To completely change the way I view the world and everybody in it. You know, and I've, like, but what was the catalyst in getting me into Alcoholics Anonymous was I got arrested for heroin distribution. That's simple. And I thought that was the end of my world. And a few months sober with a sponsor, that was one of the greatest experiences of my life. Because that gave me the opportunity to change my way of living that I so desperately wanted to do, but wasn't willing or able to do because my own pride and ego blocked me off. You know, and through Alcoholics Anonymous today, like, I live a fabulous life. I really do. And I take no credit for it. I'd like to thank you guys for listening.